The real test will be, will the Department of Justice release the files? Or will it all remain tied up in investigations?
Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene is right. Just wanted to say that once in my life.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it
ain't. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, an all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today, and my goodness, is it a busy political news day today, even up to just before we went on the air, moments before some breaking news. We will get to all of that. We got a lot to cover. From the successful, long-awaited vote by the U.S. House on Tuesday to release the Epstein files, and apparently moments ago in the U.S. Senate, to some big news in the gerrymandering wars, just to give you a few appetizers today, but that's hardly all we've got to get to, not to mention Desi Doyen and the Green News Report later this hour. Hi, Des.
Hi. Clearly the most important part of the hour coming.
Obviously,
at the end.
Yes, we all know that.
Yes.
That as environmentalists and the UN summit taking place in Brazil this week have finally come to realize that taking on disinformation by the fossil fuel industry regarding our climate crisis is as important, frankly, as replacing the deadly fossil fuels that are causing our climate crisis. Is that fair to say?
That is a very fair summary of
that. Yeah, can't really deal with one without dealing with the other, it seems, and they're
although
finally
we've been
figuring
trying
that
for
out.
A very long time, but yeah, it's not working.
But before we get to all of that and more, Tuesday afternoon began with pomp and circumstance outside of Donald Trump's pathetic, newly gilded White House as it prepared for a Tuesday night black tie state dinner for a man who in 2018 ordered that a journalist and U.S. resident who was at times critical of the Saudi Arabian monarchy be hacked into pieces with a bone saw. Sure, let's give him a dinner, a state dinner. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman arrived at the White House to a grand welcome from President Trump on Tuesday, greeted at the South Portico with an honor guard of black horses and herald trumpeters. He was treated to a flyover of six fighter jets that streaked across the Washington sky as large U.S. and Saudi flags fluttered from the black horses that walked across the South Lawn in procession. It was the first visit to the White House by a Saudi royal since the 2018 murder of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi during Trump's previous term in office. Later on Tuesday, the prince would be feted at an elaborate dinner along with tech CEOs and other businesses who also don't seem to mind palling around with a guy who orders his political enemies hacked to death with a bone saw. Quote, "We're more than meeting," Trump told reporters last Friday ahead of the visit by bin Salman on Tuesday. Quote, "We are honoring Saudi Arabia and the crown prince," he said. That, of course, would be the man who the CIA and others in the U.S. intelligence community determined ordered the gruesome murder of Khashoggi to be hacked to death with a bone saw. He is the man that Trump is, quote, honoring on Tuesday at the White House, where you can, I guess, tell a man by the company they keep. In a joint presser with bin Salman on Tuesday, Trump dismissed criticism of the crown prince over the 2018 killing, saying, and I quote, "Things happen." Yes, heads of state ordering their political enemies to be cut into pieces with a bone saw, that does happen. What are you going to do? contradicting the 2021 findings of the CIA and the White House Office of the Director of National Intelligence, Trump claimed that the Crown Prince, quote, knew nothing about it, and said about Khashoggi that, quote, a lot of people didn't like that gentleman. Right. So why not saw him into pieces with a bone saw? What's the harm? More pomp with your circumstance, Your Royal Highness? How about billions of dollars worth of American-made F-35 jet fighters to make it a bit easier for you to kill all of your other enemies? Saw them into pieces one at a time can be grueling work, after all. Trump lashed out at a reporter who asked the question about Khashoggi's murder, suggesting people didn't like the guy anyway, and calling the reporter, quote, fake news, as he does to any journalist who questions anything that he does not like, before chastising her for embarrassing the royal murderer visiting the White House on Tuesday.
You're mentioning somebody that was extremely controversial. A lot of people didn't like that gentleman that you're talking about. Whether you like him or didn't like him, things happen. But he knew nothing about it, and we can leave it at that. You don't have to embarrass our guest by asking a question like that.
It was controversial. What are you going to do? In response to Trump's remarks, the quote, a lot of people didn't like Khashoggi, Robert Weissman, the co-president of government watchdog group Public Citizen, said, quote, Trump's shameful and disgusting comments about the assassination of Jamal Khashoggi cannot be separated from Trump's personal business interests with the Saudi regime. Trump and his family are receiving, at a minimum, tens of millions annually from branding deals with Saudi Arabia, payments for doing nothing more than permitting their name to be attached to Saudi projects. Those projects, said Weissman, which are blatantly unconstitutional, are compromising U.S. foreign policy and led to today's disgraceful display. He added, quote, a Congress worth its salt would be rushing to investigate and denounce every aspect of Trump's merger of personal business and U.S. diplomatic interests. And of course, as you know, had President Biden had his family had even a whiff of business relationship with the Saudis, much less billions of dollars worth, as the Trump family has, if that had happened, of course, we'd still be watching congressional hearings about that if they hadn't impeached President Biden for it somehow by now. Now, just to be fair, President Biden also met with bin Salman in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia during his presidency, famously or infamously giving him a fist bump when they met back in 2022. That was just after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, however, when Biden was seeking lower oil prices from the Saudis amidst an effort to help Europe and the rest of the world move away from Russian oil, which helped pay for its deadly and ongoing invasion of its sovereign neighbor. So that was going on at the White House today. And in other news, in advance of Tuesday's long-awaited vote in the U.S. House, forced by the virtually unprecedented success of the signing of a discharge petition by a majority of House members, all Democrats and four Republicans, four courageous Republicans, I should note, demanding that the Department of Justice release the investigative files regarding Jeffrey Epstein, the late pedophile and longtime close personal friend of Donald J. Trump. Because you know a man by the company they keep. The bipartisan co-sponsors of that measure held a press conference on the steps at the U.S. Capitol earlier on Tuesday while Trump was busy at the White House feting the murdering Saudi Arabian prince. They were joined once again by several of the survivors of Epstein's sexual predation, which is said to have included nearly 1,000 young girls interviewed by the DOJ during their years-long probe of the late child sex trafficker who Donald Trump characterized as, quote, great guy some years ago. One of Epstein's survivors who spoke on Tuesday, Jenna Lisa Jones, who met Epstein when she was 14 and who said she voted for Donald Trump, had harsh words for the president today at the Capitol, describing his behavior on this matter and his long cover-up of the documents as a national embarrassment. Because remember, Trump is named in the documents thousands of times, in the Epstein documents. And remember, he could order the immediate release of every single page, every photo, every video included therein immediately, as he had promised that he would when he was trying to get elected last year, with no vote of Congress even necessary to force that. Here is part of Genalisa Jones's remarks on Tuesday in advance of the House vote.
Now that checks and balances of our democracy have worked and the bill is getting passed to release the files, we are hearing the administration say they intend to investigate various Democrats who were friends with Epstein. I beg you, President Trump, please stop making this political. It is not about you, President Trump. You are our president. Please start acting like it. Show some class. Show some real leadership. Show that you actually care about the people other than yourself. I voted for you, but your behavior on this issue has been a national embarrassment. It is time to take the honest, moral ground and support the release of these files, not to weaponize pieces of the files against random political enemies that did nothing wrong, but to understand who Epstein's friends were, who covered for him, what financial institutions allowed his trafficking to continue, who knew what he was doing, but was too much of a coward to do anything about it.
That was Genalisa Jones, Epstein victim and at least one time supporter of Donald Trump. Well, in fact, the House voted overwhelmingly on Tuesday, shortly after that press conference, in favor of the bill to force the Justice Department to publicly release its files on the convicted sex offender in what AP correctly describes as a remarkable display of approval for an effort that had struggled for months to overcome opposition from Donald Trump and Republican leadership. When a small bipartisan group of House lawmakers introduced a petition in July, they know, to maneuver around House Speaker Mike Johnson's control of which bills reach the House floor and which ones do not, it appeared like all so-called discharge petitions to force a House vote as a very long-shot effort, especially as Trump repeatedly urged his supporters to dismiss the matter as a, quote, hoax. A Democrat hoax, as he loved calling it, even after lying to his supporters while running for office last year that he would release those files if they only made him president again. But both Trump and Speaker Johnson failed in their months-long effort to prevent the vote, to help protect whichever pedophiles and sex abusers who might be named in those files. Now the president has bowed to the growing momentum behind the bill and even said that he will in fact sign it if it also passes the Senate. Moments after the House vote on Tuesday, Republican Senate Majority Leader John Thune said his chamber will act swiftly on the bill. And I guess now we have found out how swiftly they will act. In fact, just minutes before we went on air, it looks like the Senate approved the bill from the House as is, and they did so unanimously.
Yes, they did.
By unanimous consent. The bill did pass, in fact, in the House with an enormous, in the House earlier, before the Senate, with an enormous margin as well. In fact, 427-1. After which a number of Epstein's victims and their supporters could be heard cheering from the House gallery.
On this vote, the yeas are 427, the nays are 1. Two-thirds being in the affirmative. The rules are suspended, the bill is passed, and without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
For the record, the only no vote, now apparently the only no vote in both chambers of Congress, came from Congressman Clay Higgins, a Louisiana Republican who is a fervent supporter of Donald Trump and apparently...
fervent is putting it mildly.
Yeah, and apparently of protecting pedophiles at this point. Nice job, Clay. The bill is, if it is now, after being signed, passed in the House and passed in the Senate just as we go to air. If it is in fact signed into law by Donald Trump, who knows, that could happen before we even get off air today. As it is currently written, as it was written and passed in both chambers, would require the Attorney General to release in a searchable and downloadable format, quote, all unclassified records, documents, communications, and investigative materials related to Epstein and his co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell. Flight logs or travel records, people and entities connected with Epstein, and internal emails, notes, other internal Justice Department communications about the case. Those records would need to be released, quote, not later than 30 days after enactment of the law. And the law is officially enacted once the president signs it. This is important, and I'll get to a bit more of this in a moment, following up on my commentary on this matter yesterday. But the legislation says that the Attorney General may withhold or redact any information that identifies victims, good, or would jeopardize an active federal investigation. Well, that part is less good. I'll get to that in a moment. Quote, these women have fought the most horrific fight that no woman should have to fight, said Georgia Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene on the Capitol steps at the presser held with survivors before the vote, adding, they did it by banding together and never giving up. That's what we did by fighting so hard against the most powerful people in the world, she said, even the president of the United States, in order to make this vote happen today. That was Marjorie Taylor Greene, one of Trump's years-long loyalists. In response to Greene's unwillingness to remove her name from the Epstein Files discharge petition that Donald Trump was against before he decided to pretend he was for it late on Sunday night, Trump posted to his failing social media site on Saturday, quote, lightweight Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Brown, noting parenthetically, green grass turns brown when it begins to rot. Oh, get it? Hilarious.
Especially when you have to explain it.
Marjorie Taylor Brown, quote, betrayed the entire Republican Party, Trump said, when she turned left and became the rhino, Republican in name only, that we all know she always was. That followed after Trump had previously called her Marjorie Traitor Green, which Green said had led to an uptick in death threats against her, and an apology from Green herself for participating in previously in what she described as toxic politics, which she is now calling for an end to. Epstein's survivors have had to wait months for this vote. That, of course, is because House Speaker Mike Johnson, who claims to be a devout Christian, kept the House closed for legislative business for nearly 2 months in order to refuse the swearing in of Democratic Rep. Adelita Grijalva of Arizona during the government shutdown. Grijalva, who won her special election back in September, but was only sworn in a week, less than a week ago, had pledged to provide the crucial 218th vote to the petition for the Epstein Files bill, but only after she was sworn into office last week could she sign her name to the discharge petition to give it majority support in the 435-member House. It then became obvious that, in fact, the bill would pass, whether Trump or Johnson wanted it to or not, after Trump's hard press to get either Colorado's Lauren Boebert or South Carolina's Nancy Mace to remove their signatures from the petition. None of them would, to their credit. After that, both Johnson and Trump, yes, began to crumble, to fold. On Sunday, Trump announced on social media that he wanted Republicans to vote for the bill, because sure he did, in his I meant to do that strategy. Green, for her part, told reporters that Trump's decision to fight the bill had betrayed his Make America Great Again political movement. It's one of the reasons that behind her prominent split with the president, she said, quote, watching this turn into a fight has ripped MAGA apart, she said. Sad. Meanwhile, House Democrats celebrated the vote as a rare win for the minority. Quote, it's a complete and total surrender, said House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries, because as Democrats, we made clear from the very beginning, the survivors and the American people deserve full and complete transparency as it relates to the lives that were ruined by Jeffrey Epstein. However, as I explained yesterday, while all of this is good news, and there has been talk that maybe the Senate would somehow rewrite the bill, they haven't. They just passed it as is. But as it stands, and as Thomas Massey, Republican of Kentucky, the Republican lead co-sponsor of this bill, as he noted on ABC's This Week over the weekend, the clause that allows the DOJ to withhold documents if their release, quote, would jeopardize an active federal investigation, well, that is likely to become the next blockade, as far as I can see it, for the Trump administration, given that Trump just last week ordered the DOJ to open a brand new investigation into Epstein's relationship with Trump's various political enemies, and his lackey, Attorney General Pam Bondi, quickly complied and announced a new investigation after previously saying the Epstein matters was done, case closed, nothing left to investigate. Well, now suddenly, after Donald Trump asks for such an investigation, now suddenly we have a federal investigation that is open. Here again is Kentucky's Republican Congressman Massey on Sunday.
I have another concern about these investigations that he's announced. If they have ongoing investigations in certain areas, those documents can't be released. So this might be a big smokescreen, these investigations, to open a bunch of them to as a last-ditch effort to prevent the release of the Epstein files.
Yep.
I wonder if anybody is going to be asking Attorney General Bondi why she said several months ago when she said nothing left to investigate,
yeah.
And now suddenly there is.
Do you think it would matter even if they did ask her?
Probably not.
It's Pam Bondi. She doesn't give a damn. That is how unbelievably corrupt she is. Trump's absurd effort to avoid an appearance of defeat by suddenly backing Tuesday's votes to force the Justice Department to turn over the Epstein files that Trump already has the power to release right now, immediately today. He's had it since the first day he took office back in January. Well, that pretend change of heart has changed the political calculus on the Hill. Not only did Trump's move make it acceptable for the GOP House members to vote yes to releasing the files, but as of Tuesday morning, it looked like there was a lot of reporting that the Senate Republicans were not going to bottle it up, as many thought they might in the Senate. And now we know, in fact, they didn't bottle it up. They voted for it immediately as is, passed it by unanimous consent, just as Politico had reported could actually happen. Now it did. Trump himself even declared that he would sign the measure, in fact, if it came to his desk. TPM's David Kurtz said, believe him at your own risk, before he added, here's the thing, even if Trump is forced to sign it to keep up the appearance of having dodged a stinging defeat, there's no reason to think the Justice Department will release anything damaging about Trump. In the short term, he says, no formal enforcing mechanism exists that would incentivize the Justice Department officials or the Trump White House to abide by Congress's demand. The Trump DOJ, he says, certainly won't prosecute anyone for defying Congress. It's not clear that the GOP-controlled Congress itself could enforce its demand, either legally or politically. Practically, he notes, there's no real way for Congress to even know if the Trump administration buries damaging documents or files. Trump and the White House also seem to be leaving themselves a pretty big out, notes Kurtz, somewhat echoing the point that I've been trying to make that Massey also made on Sunday in his social media post, suddenly declaring that he didn't care if the House Oversight Committee got the Epstein files. Trump caveated it by saying they, quote, can have whatever they are legally entitled to. Legally entitled to, argues Kurtz, is doing a lot of work there. The Trump White House and his DOJ will be the ones to make that determination as far as what anyone is legally entitled to and can use it to throw a broad protective blanket over any evidence that is damaging to Donald Trump. Even our new apparent ally on this matter, yes, Marjorie Taylor Greene, is concerned about exactly that as well, as she made clear before the vote at that presser on the Capitol steps early on Tuesday.
Today, you are going to see probably a unanimous vote in the House to release the Epstein files, but the fight, the real fight, will happen after that. While I want to see every single name released so that these women don't have to live in fear and intimidation, which is something I've had a small taste of in just the past few days, just a small taste. They've been living it for years. But the real test will the Department of Justice release the files, or will it all remain tied up in investigations? That's information that needs to come out. And will the list of names that these women privately hold, and they hold it because of their fear in their heart of what would happen to them if they release it on their own, will that list of names come out? That's the real test.
And yes, once again, just so I can have said it twice in a single day, Marjorie Taylor Greene is right. All of which suggests, Kurtz advises, managing expectations in this lawless new world where accountability and enforcement mechanisms have been all but removed. No need, he says, to throw one's hands up and surrender, but the Epstein file scandal isn't likely to have the denouement that we've become conditioned to expect, not so long as the Justice Department is sidelined and Republicans control both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue. So we will see. Good news, of course, with all of this on Tuesday. Where it goes from here remains to be seen. Don't get too excited, but yeah, the good guys seem to have won one here. Now, before we get to a break and come back with today's big gerrymandering wars news, one more quick point concerning, yes, another discharge petition. You know, as noted, these things are incredibly rare, or perhaps I should say it's incredibly rare that they actually work, that they actually get enough signatures to represent a majority of the House on a matter that the House Speaker will not put on the floor for a vote by himself. So it happened, frankly, for the first time in my memory, successfully for the Epstein petition. But apparently it has now already happened again on Monday this week, as apparently the weakness of Donald Trump and his hold over the House via his lackey House Speaker Mike Johnson is seemingly continuing to wane. One might argue even crumble with the news of the past few hours. But according to reporting from the Federal News Network on Monday, a bipartisan bill that would end the Trump administration's rollback of collective bargaining rights for most federal employees is now guaranteed to get a full House vote, now that a majority of lawmakers have signed on in support of it. As of Monday, 218 House lawmakers signed onto a discharge petition forcing the House to vote on the Protect America's Workforce Act. The bill, led by Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick, Republican of Pennsylvania, and Jared Golden, Democrat of Maine, would restore collective bargaining rights for tens of thousands of federal employees previously removed by Trump, if the measure, which now has a majority of signatures in the House, is approved by Congress and signed by Trump. Trump signed an executive order in March that barred unions from bargaining on behalf of federal employees at many agencies on the tenuous grounds that those agencies work primarily in national security. So apparently they don't get union bargaining rights. In August, he then signed another executive order that expanded the list of agencies barred from negotiations with federal employee unions to include a majority of them. Again, whether that is legal or not, that was his executive order. Lawmakers estimate that The executive order impacts about 67% of the federal workforce because Trump is so concerned about the forgotten working men, right? The administration's policy has now barred unions from representing workers at the Departments of Defense, State, Veterans Affairs, Justice, and Energy, among others. A group of six unions led by the American Federation of Government Employees, or AFGE, sued the Trump administration over its rollback of collective bargaining rights, arguing the administration has taken an overly broad view of agencies that work primarily in national security and are thus somehow allowed to be barred from collective bargaining. A federal judge blocked the administration from forcing the executive order in April, but an appeals court stayed that decision this summer and has allowed agencies to keep canceling collective bargaining agreements that cover broad swaths of the federal workforce. Since the appeals court ruling, several agencies have rescinded their collective bargaining rights with unions entirely. Republican Congress members Mike Lawler and Nick LaLota contributed the last two signatures for the discharge petition on Monday. Lawler said in a statement that, quote, restoring collective bargaining rights strengthens our federal workforce and helps deliver more effective, accountable service to the American people. You know what else does? Having fair U.S. House districts, because it puts folks like Lawler and LaLota in a place where they're in a kind of a purple district and they need to come to some sort of cooperation across the aisle to do stuff that Americans want. If they were in hard right districts, they probably wouldn't have even bothered to sign on to this. So yes, fair maps help all of us, whether they're occupied by Republicans or Democrats, but we'll get to the gerrymandering wars in a moment. Lawler said, quote, every American deserves the right to have a vote, a voice in the workplace, including those who serve their country every single day. Supporting workers and ensuring good government are not opposing ideas, he said. They go hand in hand. Everett Kelly, the national president of the American Federation of Government Employees, applauded Republican lawmakers for supporting the bill and called on the House to quickly vote on it. AFGE's National VA Council, Veterans Administration Council, recently filed a lawsuit challenging the VA's selective enforcement of Trump's executive order. The complaint states that VA Secretary Doug Collins scrapped collective bargaining agreements with unions who opposed the administration's federal workforce policies, but spared labor contracts for unions that represent VA police, security guards, and firefighters. Man, that sounds unlawful. Meanwhile, another bipartisan group of lawmakers is also leading a bill that would restore collective bargaining rights for VA employees specifically. Senators Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, Lisa Murkowski, Republican of Alaska, Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, and Congresswoman Delia Ramirez, Democratic representative from Illinois, are leading that bill. The National Treasury Employees Union, as well as the National Weather Service Employees Organization and the Patent Office Professional Association are all suing the Trump administration over its collective bargaining rollback that members of Congress hope to fix here with this bill. Federal courts in D.C. will hold proceedings in those cases next month, but soon there may be another wildly affirmative vote in the U.S. House, thanks to this second discharge petition to help support those legal efforts. Who says the good guys can't win every now and again, even in the Trump era? Speaking of, let's take a quick break, and we will have the latest news from the courts in, yes, the gerrymandering wars. And it is, for today at least, very, very good news, I think, that Desi Doyen and the Green News Report are all still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
We'll be right back. Republicans and the Democrats. You can mess with the liberals and the slick bureaucrats. You can mess with the media and a third world refugee. You can mess with Texas, but don't you mess with me.
All right. I won't mess with you, sir. But I may mess with Texas. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. All right, this is fun. A federal court on Tuesday blocked Texas from using a redrawn U.S. House map drawn to flip five minority blue House districts in the state to red, and touching off a nationwide redistricting battle that is also a major piece of Trump's desperate strategy to preserve his slim Republican majority ahead of the 2026 critical midterm elections. In a 2-1 ruling, following 10 days of hearings in federal court over 2 weeks, a panel of federal judges in El Paso sided with opponents of that new map, who argued that Texas's unusual summer redrawing of congressional districts would harm Black and Hispanic residents. The decision was authored by U.S. District Judge Jeffrey V. Brown, who was nominated to the federal bench by Donald Trump during his first term.
Good.
Quote, "The public perception of this case is that it's about politics," the ruling reads. "To be sure, politics played a role in drawing the 2025 map, but it was much more than just politics," the judges wrote. "Substantial evidence shows that Texas racially gerrymandered the 2025 map." The decision comes amid the widening national battle over redistricting. Missouri and North Carolina followed Texas with new maps themselves, adding an additional Republican seat in each. We've already told you that the case in Missouri is already being challenged and may get a vote on the ballot next year, which would mean that for now the Missouri map would go back to the previous map. So voters are pushing back. To counter the moves by the Republicans, California voters approved a ballot initiative to give Democrats an additional five seats here. The Trump administration has filed a federal lawsuit hoping to block that California map, only that one they've challenged, with Attorney General Pam Bondi calling it, quote, "a brazen power grab." The one out here in California. Yeah. That's the brazen power grab and an effort to, quote, "entrench one-party rule." You know how much Pam Bondi would be against that. She argues that white voters in California are being deprived of their rights under the Voting Rights Act, or in this case, the Voting Whites Act. In a post on social media, California Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom celebrated the ruling in Texas, stating, quote, "Donald Trump and Greg Abbott played with fire, got burned, and democracy won." Well, we will see. As AP observes, the ruling is a blow to Trump's rush to create a more favorable political landscape for the GOP in next year's midterms, at least for now. The governor, Greg Abbott, in Texas, vowed a swift appeal to his pals at the U.S. Supreme Court and defended the map that was engineered to give Republicans five additional House seats via a partisan gerrymander, as he characterizes it. It's not racial. It's all completely just a partisan gerrymander. Republicans in Texas insisted that they drew the map only for partisan advantage, and as the corrupt U.S. Supreme Court majority ruled in 2019, partisan gerrymandering is perfectly fine. It's a political question. It is not one for the federal courts to decide. That's what the corrupted Supreme Court said. In other words, partisan gerrymandering by the party in control drawing maps in order to keep themselves entrenched in power is just fine with them. It is apparently what the founders intended. Unless a state court declares otherwise, but that's up to each state on its own. The federal government has nothing to say about it. You can partisan gerrymander to your heart's content. Now, U.S. Attorney General Bondi, after filing suit against California's voter-approved maps, remember, we approved this statewide by a huge margin just a week or two ago, After that, Bondi said on social media, quote, Texas's map was drawn the right way for the right reasons. We look forward, and maybe that should be for the white reasons. We look forward to Texas's victory at the Supreme Court, the corrupt attorney general said. A coalition of civil rights groups, however, representing black and Hispanic voters, argued that the map reduced the influence of minority voters in Texas, making it a racial gerrymander that violates the Federal Voting Rights Act and the U.S. Constitution. They sought an order blocking Texas from using the map while their case proceeded, which the judges on Tuesday granted in their ruling. If it stands, which is a big if, I think, but we will see. If it stands, Texas will be forced to use the map that was drawn by the GOP-controlled legislature back in 2021 for next year's elections instead, even while the voter-approved map here in California and perhaps another one for another three seats in Virginia are allowed to be used next year because, well, when you play with fire, you might get burned, just as the governor said, the governor of California. Quote, today's decision is a critical victory for voting rights and a powerful rebuke of Texas's brazen attempt to dilute the political power of Latino and black voters. That, according to attorney Abba Khanna, representing minority voters in the fight over the new Texas map. The panel of judges here signal that they think the map's critics have a substantial chance of winning their case after a full trial. An appointee of Democratic President Barack Obama joined the Trump-appointed Judge Brown in the majority, while an appointee of Republican President Ronald Reagan actually dissented that ruling. Quote, without an injunction, the ruling said, the racial minorities the plaintiff groups represent will be forced to be represented in Congress based on likely unconstitutional racial classifications for at least 2 years. In fact, Republicans hold 25 of Texas's 38 congressional seats already on the state's already gerrymandered U.S. House map, not the one that they just passed. Had the new map been in place, in fact, last year, Trump would have likely carried 30 congressional districts in Texas. The new map decreased from 16 to 14, the number of congressional districts where minorities comprise a majority of voting age citizens. Texas eliminated 5 of the state's 9 coalition districts where a collection of minorities, black, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, etc., are combined to create a minority coalition of voters. There might not be enough of them to trigger this on their own, but collectively it becomes a minority coalition. 5 of the 6 Democratic lawmakers who are now under the new map being drawn in to competition with other incumbents on the new map, 5 out of the 6 are black or Hispanic. Go figure. Quote, it's quite obvious that Texas's effort to redistrict mid-decade before next year's midterm elections is racially motivated. That, according to Derek Johnson, the president of the National NAACP, which was among the parties suing Texas over the redistricting. The state's intent here is to reduce the members of Congress who represent black communities, and that in and of itself is unconstitutional, he said. Republicans using absurd logic that I'm not even going to try to bother to explain here for the moment.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Argued that the map is actually better for minority voters than the previous one. In a statement on Tuesday, Abbott said, quote, the legislature redrew our congressional maps to better reflect Texans' conservative voting preferences and for no other reason. Now, sure he did. For the record, I did the math here. On the current map, Republicans currently control 66% of Texas's U.S. House seats. Democrats control 34% of the seats. But last year, Donald Trump won the state with only 56% of the vote. So they control 66% of the seats, but when it comes to a statewide vote, well, they only won 56%. So they've already got an advantage with their already gerrymandered maps. The new, apparently unconstitutional map would only increase the percent of GOP's controlled seats, even though Republicans already control more seats than they should, at least based on last year's presidential results. That said, another reminder that the corrupt Supreme Court is currently deciding whether or not to kill the section of the Voting Rights Act at issue here, and most experts believe that they are likely to do so. The only question may be when they do so. Will it be in January next year, in time to racially gerrymander seats in dozens of GOP-controlled states? Or will it be later in the year, in June or July, after which most states will have already begun or already finished their primary elections for the critical 2026 midterm election cycle?
And with this new ruling in Texas, with those judges saying, yep, hey, that's a racial gerrymander, you can't do that, I wonder if it will put a little bit of a fire under the right-wing justices to say, yeah, we got to get to this right away. We got to allow racial gerrymandering right away.
I think it might. We will see. No predictions, but don't celebrate too much just yet, but go ahead and celebrate a little. We could use some celebrations of late.
Yeah.
Finally, in the meantime, before Tuesday's very, very sad federal court ruling by a Trump-appointed federal judge in Texas, a clearly faltering Donald Trump was already throwing a bit of a fit over all of this redistricting stuff over the weekend. Donald Trump is now calling for the GOP leader of Indiana's state Senate to be ousted. The GOP leader of the state Senate in Indiana to be ousted after he refused to reconvene the chamber to redraw congressional maps in favor of Republicans, as Donald Trump has insisted. Last Friday, Indiana's Republican state Senate pro tempore Roderick Bray announced there were not enough Republican votes in the Indiana state Senate to move forward with a redistricting special session. After the pressure from the White House to do exactly that, despite Indiana's already very red House map, in a Sunday morning post to his failing social media site, Trump said that he was, quote, very disappointed in the President pro tem, Roderick Bray, and Senator Greg Good, both of them Republicans, mind you, for standing in the way of redistricting efforts, quote, because of these two politically correct type gentlemen, with the word gentleman in quotes for some weird reason, they could be depriving Republicans of a majority in the U.S. House. A very big deal, Trump desperately screamed in all caps. He also accused Indiana's Republican Governor Mike Braun of failing to ensure that the measure received the necessary votes to pass. Quote, considering that Mike wouldn't be governor without me, not even close, it's disappointing, Trump said. Any Republican that votes against this important redistricting, potentially having an impact on America itself, should be primaried, he said. But by the way, Braun did sign a proclamation last month calling for a special session. But he said it's the Senate's responsibility to, quote, do the right thing and show up to vote for fair maps. And they've decided for now, anyway, they don't want to. State Senator Good publicly opposed the redistricting effort after holding a listening session with constituents earlier this month. Well, there's an idea. During the event, every participant spoke against the Republican plan. Every single one. That, of course, helped trigger Trump's weekend tantrum when he wrote, quote, Senators Bray, Good, and the others to be released to the public this afternoon should do their job, in all caps, and do it now. If not, let's get them out of office ASAP, he said. And some Trump supporters apparently took him quite literally. Good became the victim of a swatting incident at his home just hours later. That, of course, is a form of harassment involving calling an emergency service, like a SWAT team, to someone's home without their knowledge, saying that a terrible crime was going on. The Vigo County Sheriff's Office reported that an email was sent to them falsely claiming that harm had been done to someone inside of Good's home, which could end up getting someone like him killed. Trump, however, did not address that incident, and instead, because he doesn't give a damn about political violence unless it's directed at him, he instead said that he would endorse the opponents of any Indiana Republican who does not support redistricting. He also falsely claimed that Democrats are, quote, trying to steal seats everywhere, which he blamed on the, quote, rigged census. The last U.S. Census, by the way, was conducted in 2020 while Trump was in office. The redistricting issue will likely be taken up when Indiana's regular legislative session begins in early January next year, according to the Heartland Signal from WCPT 820 Radio in Indiana. Quick break, and we're back with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. Alrighty then, Donald Trump's no good, very bad, horrible day, week, month, I don't know, continues a little bit in our latest Green News Report.
And you think those tactics and techniques are going to help you? They will not, because I will run right over them.
Trump's embattled acting director of FEMA runs over himself and resigns.
Every moment lost puts billions of people, especially the poorest, at greater risk.
UN Climate Summit in Brazil finally tackles climate disinformation. Plus, documents reveal Exxon funded climate denial campaigns across Latin America.
You don't say. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The UN and the World Economic Forum have each declared that climate change and disinformation are the greatest threats to humanity.
See all the good things that can happen when the U.S. doesn't show up at these climate meetings?
Yes.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, so this punk who was chosen by Donald Trump to run FEMA, he's out?
Yes, he is.
Not even 6 months in.
That's right. The Trump administration's acting chief of the Federal Emergency Management Agency has resigned after only 6 months, during which the agency suffered steep cuts in staff, disaster funding, and programs. David Richardson had no previous disaster management experience when he was appointed, and he faced steep criticism over FEMA's handling of deadly floods in Central Texas earlier this year. His departure intensifies concerns over FEMA's ability to respond to future disasters. This was the guy who said he did not know that there was a hurricane season.
Sure, put him in charge of FEMA.
Trump's first acting FEMA chief was fired after saying he did not support the administration's agenda to eliminate the agency entirely. Some science, a new report by the Global Carbon Project, finds that even though renewable energy is surging around the world, it is not displacing fossil fuels quickly enough to meet Paris Agreement targets. The analysis projects that fossil-fueled carbon dioxide emissions will rise slightly and hit a new record high in 2025. Emissions rose significantly in the United States and much of the rest of the world, but stayed nearly flat in Europe and China. China's emissions appear to be plateauing after decades of growth. Relatedly, in the second week of the United Nations COP30 climate summit in Brazil, high-level negotiations are underway. Nations are wrangling over implementation of the Paris Climate Agreement and cutting humanity's climate-warming emissions that cause dangerous man-made climate change. Sticking points remain how to accelerate faster emissions cuts and climate finance, how much wealthy nations will assist developing countries with funding and technology to adapt to climate impacts and transition to clean energy. The Trump administration sent no delegates, but many U.S. states are participating. For the first time, the climate talks in Brazil have identified climate disinformation as a distinct threat in itself.
Good, because it is.
Two reports back that up. According to newly revealed documents published by The Guardian and DeSmog blog, oil giant Exxon has been secretly financing a widespread campaign to spread climate science denial and disinformation across Latin America. Exxon directly financed the U.S.-based Atlas Network, a coalition of more than 500 think tanks and denial groups worldwide to spread lies and disinformation about the role of fossil fuels in causing the climate crisis.
A product so wonderful they have to spend millions and millions of dollars to lie about it.
A different report released at the COP30 summit details a surge of fake news and disinformation to derail the clean energy transition, propagated by the powerful fossil fuel industry to maintain the status quo of climate inaction. At a press conference, Mark Watts of Climate 40 Cities explained that disinformation campaigns have succeeded in demonizing normally benign topics and solutions.
We see that now in a whole slew of policies that ought to be just very universally supported and normally are to begin with, where then a kind of massive push of disinformation comes in. So clean air zones, who's not in favour of clean air, but these have become massive contentious issues, electric buses, cycle lanes, and indeed even huge disinformation about when climate disasters happen, what are the causes of those.
At COP30, a number of countries have now signed on to the new Global Framework for Climate Information Integrity that establishes guardrails and spells out concrete steps for countries to begin countering and dismantling networks of climate science denial funded by the fossil fuel industry.
Well, no wonder the Trump administration didn't send anyone down there. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.brandblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
So this is what the truth feels like. This is more of what I had in mind.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, this is what the truth feels like.
I'll take it.
Yes, it would be a very good thing if we can dismantle the networks of climate science denial and disinformation.
Dismantle the disinformation.
Yep.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. You do that every day here on the Brandcast as our producers. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always greatly appreciated. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com or your favorite podcast site. But if you go to Bradblog, please consider hitting one of those donate buttons or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves, because this is what the truth feels like. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, you will find me at the Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
So this is what the truth feels like.